Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostel. Today, I talk with Bryce Komai. Bryce is the design lead for Fisherman Labs, a Los Angeles-based mobile app development studio. We talk about him starting college as a gerontology major, before switching to studying business after chemistry kicked his butt, teaching himself design while working on a documentary that turned into a nonprofit, designing for virtual and augmented realities, and the exciting challenges that come with emerging tech, and more, all right after this. Jack Prince is one of our favorite companies to work with. They offer great products at even better prices, with some of the best customer service I've ever seen. Why not pick Jack Prince next time you need t-shirts, business cards, stickers, or flyers printed? Right now, Jack Prince is offering 4-day turnaround on their most popular apparel products. That's 4 days with no rush fees, no hassle, and no BS. With apparel from popular brands like American Apparel, Next Level, Gildan, All Style, and more, starting as low as $3.99 each. Now is the time to take advantage of this great offer. Visit jack.inc/4days to order your apparel today. Plus, Jack Prince is giving Creative South Podcast listeners 20% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code CREATESOUTH17 at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. We've gone through and streamlined the Creative South Podcast Patreon page, cleaning out the excess and making it easier for you to support us. With options starting at just $1 per month, you can help support the podcast and even wind up with some cool Creative South Podcast swag. Every dollar helps cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. When you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South Podcast stickers and t-shirts. So, please help support the podcast and become a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. So Bryce, thanks for joining me. I guess it's this afternoon for you. It's technically evening for me.
Yep. 4 p.m. here. So just still working through our day. I just stepped out of a meeting for this one, so I'm stuck.
Awesome. Well, see, I got you out of a meeting. So that's an added bonus because everybody likes to get out of meetings.
It was honestly a meeting I didn't need to be in. I covered the design side of things, so I was just sitting there.
Trying to look busy
or
interested.
Typing very important things on my computer.
Yeah. So, and we just talked about this a minute ago, but where'd you grow up?
Yeah, so I'm actually born and raised in Los Angeles, as we chatted, one of the few. I grew up just south of LA, actually, in LA County, but not LA City. A little place called Palos Verdes, which is beautiful coastal little beach town. Grew up in LA, and actually I've stayed in LA ever since I ended up going to college at University of Southern California.
So
moved about 20 miles north of where I grew up, and then once I graduated I moved about 10 miles west of where I went to college. So definitely LA all the way.
That works out well. You got family there, so everybody around, you're not having to constantly make new friend groups and stuff like that. You're established.
Totally. It's crazy. Like it's a huge blessing. Pretty much all my family, including cousins, except for maybe three of my cousins, live within 20 miles of each other.
Oh, wow.
So that's rare for LA too. You know, like the fact that we're such rooted families here is incredible. And it's such a huge blessing. I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah. My immediate family, with the exception of my parents, are pretty much within 30 miles of me. I've got an uncle who lived about 30 miles from me, about 20 miles away. My brother lives now. And his kids, and then my in-laws are literally 3 miles away from me, which is both good and bad.
Yeah. A blessing and a curse. I'm sure.
I mean, thankfully they've stopped showing up unannounced.
Okay. There you go.
So that works out well. I used to joke with my wife, one of these days, if they show up unannounced, I'm just going to answer the door naked.
just really set the tone, huh?
Just come straight out of the shower and go, hey.
that might do the trick.
I'm sure it would. Make Thanksgiving awkward, that's for sure.
Oh yeah.
When you were growing up, were you big into art? Were you a sporty kid?
What the yeah, kid were you? I was kind of all over the place, to be honest. I definitely was a sporty kid. I played soccer and baseball all the way up through. I almost went to college for soccer.
Oh wow!
And I played competitive baseball up into high school. So I definitely fell kind of in the more like sporty crowd. Mm-hmm. But I pretty early on, I fell in love with music. So, just was playing in bands and, writing music with buddies. So on the creative side, that was a huge outlet for me.
Sure.
Especially in high school. And I think, you know, pretty early on, I had some affinity for, graphic design or, you know, just some creative outlets and just mm-hmm. like me and my buddies making stupid shirts and, you know, going to town with like spray paint and, you know, kind of getting crazy with different things like that. So, you know, I'd say like in high school, I kind of was in all those worlds.
Sure.
That said, I don't think in high school I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a creative. I want to be a creative. I honestly had no idea what I wanted to do, even through most part of college.
Really?
So yeah, I mean, luckily, you know, I had that creative background. My mom is extremely creative. She's crazy, crazy talented. And, so I think I get that from her for sure. And I think just as I kind of went through high school and especially, through college, just really started getting an understanding of what that could be for me.
Gotcha. When you got to college, what were you studying?
Oh boy.
Let me rephrase that. How many majors did you go through?
I went through three majors. So I started and I'll be stoked if anyone knows this, but, USC has a gerontology school.
You wanted to help old people?
Yeah. Well, so because I didn't know what I wanted to do, my dad's actually a dentist. And so, you know, hey, why not, you know, if I don't know what I'm going to do, why not spend like $300,000 and go to dental school one day?
That makes sense.
So I was like, yeah, I figured, you know what? I have an opportunity to, you know, buy my dad's practice from him one day. Maybe I should pursue medicine.
Sure.
And that said, I was not like, I don't even think I took a chemistry class in high school. My high school was a little unique, so I don't think I took chemistry, but I remember sitting, anyway, sorry. So the gerontology major has a pre-med track and mm-hmm. I didn't want to be a bio or chem major.
Okay.
So I was like, hey, let's go for this gerontology thing. I was the one of two students in my grade in this gerontology school.
Gotcha.
I bet you this is the first time that you've had someone say that they at one point were a gerontology major.
I think you're the first person I've ever met that said they were a gerontology major.
I'm gonna own that. but yeah, so sitting in chemistry like week one, and I was like just so overwhelmed. Knew there's no way in hell that I would be able to stick 4 years out of doing, you know, this pre-med track. These kids around me were incredibly smart. I was like struggling to finish the homework in time and, you know,
so,
anything.
So you're trying to remember what a covalent bond is and how to figure out a mole.
Oh yeah. And I don't know if I ever,
and that's as much as I remember about chemistry from high school.
See, that's honestly more than what I did. so yeah, pretty quickly I was like, clearly there was a misalignment in terms of what my skill set was, what my passion was.
Sure.
Also, you know, college is an important time. So I didn't want to waste 4 years of, you know, of my time there studying something that I didn't like, especially something that would require so much time of studying.
Sure.
So,
and $300,000 of your parents' money.
Yeah. And quite a bit of cash. So, you know, I kind of started exploring what could be next. And USC actually has a music industry program.
Sure, that makes sense.
And so at that point I was, you know, I knew I wanted to be in business, but for me that channel was music. I loved music. super involved in, like I said, bands kind of growing up, and really just was excited about potentially a career in music industry. Mm-hmm. So I powered through some music industry for honestly until, so I switched at the, after my first semester freshman year, and then up through that landed, I think finished junior year with music industry, and midway through my junior year, I started taking just general business classes.
Sure.
Because I realized I'd learned pretty much everything you could learn from a college, a 4-year degree in music industry. Mm-hmm. It's not the most challenging of degrees. so I was like, okay, I should probably start exploring some other things. And midway through junior year, I decided to double major in business administration mm-hmm. and music industry. And then after junior year, I just decided to drop music industry. I was like 12 units shy of a double major, but I didn't want to pay for that, you know, that those extra units. So I ended up graduating on time with business administration, kind of a focus in entrepreneurship and marketing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, not design.
Yeah. So how do you go from getting a, you know, business administration, you know, bachelor's of science degree and almost a music industry degree to doing design? What is your first gig out of college? What are you doing?
Yeah. So it's honestly, it's a crazy story. It blows my mind that I'm where I'm at right now. During college, I was involved with the creation of a documentary. So to tack on to all that, now I spent some time in film.
USC's got a great film program.
Yeah, exactly. So me and two really close buddies from college, we ended up going to South Korea and filmed a documentary mm-hmm. about child abandonment in South Korea. We heard this story. It was on the front page of LA Times. My buddy Brian, who's the filmmaker, mm-hmm. He's like, we got to tell the story. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. Let's go. I'll help produce. I actually wrote some music for the film as well. And this story, it's basically about, it's about a man who built a box on the side of his house to receive sure. unwanted children that would otherwise be left in the streets or in dumpsters or just left, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. So it more is a band-aid on a larger issue, but this man had saved over 600 kids
oh, wow.
Through this box. And so we went and told the story. And it ended up being way more than we thought. It was supposed to be like a 20-minute short, maybe raise like $10,000 for this family and just like be done with it. And I ended up turning into 2 years, a nonprofit that went on to raise over $5 million.
Chump change.
Yeah, chump change. Yeah, it was crazy, man. So some crazy stuff. This story is just so incredible. People rallied behind it. Mm-hmm. And basically, as we kind of distributed the film and built this nonprofit to support this man's family and the work that they're doing through his organization, as well as just in general, tell and share this story about, you know, child abandonment and, mm-hmm. and some of the issues that around the world people are facing regarding that. This nonprofit became this pretty large entity that me and my buddies ended up operating. And for me, I stepped into the more creative director role. And, you know, up to this point, like in college, I was doing a lot of graphic design. I'm self-taught.
Sure.
So, just would help random people. I'd make different posters and flyers and CD art and whatever it could be. I really enjoyed doing that kind of stuff. So as this nonprofit took off, I was the guy that had to fill that role because everyone was filling different roles. And mine was like, creative director kind of stuff with strategy for acquiring donors.
Sure.
And so basically through that, I started just designing a lot more, and learning more about how do you tell a compelling story through digital? How do you make that story actually inspire people into action? Mm-hmm. And really engage people beyond just, wow, that was cool. And then I forget about it. So, we started, you know, coming up with all these concepts and ways to really engage our users our donors. I'm speaking tech talk. I'm so used to saying that, engaging our donors and just really involving them in what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we had a lot of different creative elements involved in our donation process. So just learned a ton through that. And the funny part is the when my company, when that nonprofit had office space, we were across the hall from the company I now work for. Mm-hmm. And so when things started slowing down with the nonprofit, I was interested in tech and transitioning to maybe some product type stuff. And I would just go over and pick the brains of the co-founders of the company I'm currently at, mm-hmm. just asking them questions. Hey, what resources can I tap into to really grow and learn in that area?
So kind of as a mentorship program almost?
Not even. It was not
like a structured mentorship program, right. But just a...
Right. It was two guys that they started this company just themselves, and it started growing like crazy. So I was like, hey, this is, I'm across the hall. Like, I got some stuff to learn, like, might as well tap into this. It ended up being a really cool relationship. And I'd known those guys previously, through some other things, but mm-hmm. they eventually were like, hey, you know, we know you're interested. We can't get you like a full-time gig right now, but, you know, we'd love to have you involved in a lot of stuff. We see that you have, you know, some potential, and we've seen what you've done with the nonprofit and kind of building that out to the size that you did. So, mm-hmm. You know, we want to try to get you involved on some stuff. So that started, that kind of started my involvement with where I'm at now, Fisherman Labs, which is a full service agency. At the time it was like probably like four or five people. When I first had met them, and then by the time I started getting involved with them more, actually doing some work with them, it was probably about 10 people. And what quickly turned to like from like a, hey, we might have you do some like QA and just like help out like right away, because we were so run and gun at the time. I was like in meetings, leading like meetings and kind of stepping into some of the user experience, user interface design conversations. And so to kind of back up really quick and give some context to that,
sure.
during that time of me asking questions to them and really trying to get some insight on, hey, is this an industry I want to pursue? Like, there's something intriguing about it. I had just been literally reading every single possible thing I could ever find on the internet, like all the books that I'm sure everyone's talked about on this show already. And, you know,
you'd be surprised at how little we talk about books on this show.
that is surprising.
I need to start talking about it more, because I keep wanting to find good ones.
So. Yeah. You got to have like a books segment. but yeah, so just, there's so many incredible resources obviously now.
Sure.
So I just really was like, this is something I'm really stoked on, so I'm gonna do whatever it takes to learn and invest my time in this, because this is something I want. At the time I was considering like a UX boot camp or, you know, stuff like that, but the more I talked to the guys I work for now, they said don't do it, like, just
it's
if you have the
money.
Drive, it's a lot of money, and if you have the drive, there's resources, so just take advantage and be disciplined. So but all that to say, by the time that I started actually doing more and more work with them, I was, you know, I didn't have any practical experience necessarily. Mm-hmm. I had my experience from building out the nonprofit, all the digital stuff there. But, I had, you know, this foundation that, and honestly, like some weird confidence that I probably shouldn't have had, because I was just like, let's just go for it. I'm excited. Like, this is interesting.
Sure.
I just hopped right in, and right off the bat was thrown into situations. And honestly, that's the way I love learning.
That sink or swim mentality.
Yeah. Just kind of being like, you're here, you got to figure it out, or else like some bad stuff might happen. So like, let's go. And I mean, obviously that's not always the best context for learning, but I think for me at that point, after having spent like pretty much 6 months just learning myself, and kind of just like doing practice mock-ups and all that, you know, fun stuff that can kind of help. I was ready for just practical experience and really
sure.
hopping. So yeah, pretty much right off the bat, I think like week one, I was like leading a UX session with a potential client, and I was just like terrified, no idea what I was doing, but luckily it worked out. And here I am now, like almost 2 years later, working here at Fisherman and heading up the design team, which makes no sense to me. Like, I'm still blows my mind, but
You know they're going to hear this, right?
I told them. I tell them all the time.
Oh, like, okay.
But yeah, no. So it's been drinking from a fire hose, honestly, just so much learning and a lot of different experiences. But yeah, I think for me it's just like such a clear alignment in what I liked doing and what I had a natural talent for.
Sure.
And I think with that kind of pairing that with drive and motivation, it just has been such a huge blessing and just so fun.
Cool. Well, let's back up a little bit and talk about that drive and motivation. So when you're still at the nonprofit, you've been going over and getting pointers from Eden and I'm sorry, I don't know who the
Charles
and Charles.
Yes.
You know, and getting tips. Where are you finding the time to work on all this stuff?
That's a good question. I mean, I definitely was. I had to be pretty disciplined about that. Luckily, with the nonprofit, you know, and it being me and two of my buddies, we had flexibility. We made our own hours.
Sure.
We weren't slacking off. We took that season very seriously. There was some freedom in that as well. But you know, I'd after work, I'd just read all night or, you know, until I needed to go to sleep, or I'd do, some online courses or, any of just online exercises and kind of research I could find on the industry. And, honestly, it was just a matter of like, being excited about product design and kind of having that picture and kind of end goal. Cause honestly, like even after talking to the guys at Fisherman Labs here, I definitely was not expecting them to ever consider hiring me.
Right.
The objective was, hey, what can I do so I can go somewhere and find something that like might get my foot in the door, you know?
Sure. Something that pays better than a nonprofit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
A bootstrap nonprofit at that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think honestly, just the drive and I think, like I said, for the first time in my life, there was like a lot of clarity around something that I was actually excited about pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
Up until that point, it was kind of just like, oh, I'll be a dentist because my dad's a dentist, or I'll be in the music industry because my school has that program and I like music. Like there's never, in terms of, for me, it's like really picturing and getting that clarity around like what are skill sets that might be ingrained in me that I can tap into.
Sure.
So kind of recognizing that for the first time kind of took me off guard and I was like, wow, I should probably invest some time looking into this.
Yeah. Well, was it building out the digital assets and all that for the nonprofit that kind of sparked your interest in the first place? Or was that just a survival mechanism at the time to kind of go, hey, I need to know what the heck I'm doing if I'm going to be building this stuff?
Yeah, I think it was. That's a great question. I think it was a combination of the two. I think, to be honest, I didn't even really give much thought about the complexity behind it.
Sure.
As I was building out, like, let's say I was building out the website. I wasn't necessarily, for me, it was more of a focus on like story and like clearly communicating, which obviously improves the user experience, but right. I was less concerned about like navigation flows and like user maps and all this stuff. But I think as we got more and more into it, I was like, I just love doing this. Like I would like update our website all the time, just finding new ways to portray what we were doing and engage people. So yeah, I think that combination of kind of needing to know those things to make things successful for the nonprofit, but then being like, wow, this is a blast.
Mm-hmm. So transitioning, since I mentioned that I really haven't talked about books all that much, what were some of the resources you were looking at for, you know, I'm asking for a friend and people can't see me doing air quotes here. Because I'm a traditional print designer. I don't really do a lot of stuff with UI and UX. I mean, I'll do a website here and there, but it's not my day in and day out. So that's something that does interest me, especially the way that the world is moving. If I want to have a career past 45,
you gotta get on top of that.
Yeah, I'm already 42. If I want to have a career in the next 3 years, I need to expand my skill set here a bit.
Totally. Yeah, I'm actually, I have a list here. So I send this out to people who have reached out to me and interested in just, you know, things that I went through that helped. Mm-hmm. But from a book's perspective, I started with Design of Everyday Things. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's, you know, a classic. But I was kind of, I tried to be methodical with my approach of like, I don't want to just learn UX, UI design. I want to like, cause I never had a design education.
Sure. So you wanted to learn basic design principles as well.
Right. Yeah. So I tried to not narrow my focus too much. That book was super helpful for that. And I think for kind of just general design stuff, there's quite a few online resources that I went through on that topic. But then as I started getting more into, you know, UX, UI, Don't Make Me Think by mm-hmm. Steve Krug, it's seriously super fun to read. Like I'll dive into that one.
Sure. Somebody else just recommended that one to me recently. Yeah. Wish I could remember who.
Yeah. That's a great book. UX for Beginners, honestly, is like, it's such a fun, that's another fun book because it's broken up. It's just like super easy, super clear, really fun, quick, bite-sized pieces.
Slightly above UX for Dummies.
Yeah, exactly. And so those are kind of two. And then Sketching User Experiences was another book that was recommended to me by a buddy who worked at a local tech startup. And that book was really interesting too. That book kind of gave me a lot of insight on, you know, actually hands-on prototyping, which I think can shed light on so much about design. Mm-hmm. Not just once you can get there to where you can prototype, but I think as you see different examples and learn about how to prototype, it can inform the decisions you make before, you know, long before you even get to the point of being able to prototype. So
sure.
those are the four books that stick out in my mind that I really enjoyed reading. Mm-hmm. And like I said, there's just a handful of articles online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's tons of tutorials and stuff that you can find as well, I'm sure too.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. A lot of tutorials, honestly. And just like, I feel like it's a common, discussion regarding Dribbble, of just copying people or, improving products that you think have terrible experience or terrible interface. Mm-hmm. Like, those things, as long as you're practicing and trying to learn from that, like I'm all for that. I spent so much time like redoing Craigslist. I'm sure every young designer has redone Craigslist or something, you know? So things like that just are also very hands-on, that diagnosing an issue and just trying to apply something that you think could improve that. Spent a lot of time doing that as well.
Gotcha. So moving forward, and I want to talk about your time at Fisherman Labs, but for people who aren't familiar with Fisherman Labs, kind of give us the rundown and breakdown of what you guys do, how, you know, you mentioned it started with, you know, Eden and Charles and then kind of worked its way up. So let's do the history from the beginning to kind of now.
Yeah. So Fisherman Labs is a little over 4 years old now. Mm-hmm. So relatively, I guess relatively new. I don't know what's considered new in the agency world technically. it seems like some of these young agencies are like insane. Like they've been around for years and years. But
sure.
So Eden and Charles started the company. Actually, they were a product. They were trying to create like a find events near me type product. Like, mm-hmm. what can I do tonight in my city? And as they started trying to build this product, first of all, they quickly came to terms with a lot of the difficulties of starting your own product.
Sure.
But people started coming to them and asking them questions about technology. Mm-hmm. And so they ended up like, kind of just consulting as well and just speaking into different projects, outside of what they wanted to do. And, they started just through some connections. Charles has like 20 plus years in the gaming oh, wow. industry. Eden, programmed for a lot of his life. He ran a hedge fund before.
I was about to say, he's got a background in venture capital too, doesn't he?
He's in investment banking, and then he left investment banking to start a hedge fund at like 23 or 24 or something ridiculous. and that was, you know, so he had some background with just programming and algorithmic functions and stuff like that. So basically they came together, started that, tried to make a product, ended up consulting. And through that, through some of their connections, through their different backgrounds, they started like pulling some pretty cool brands that they got to consult with or just speak into different projects or actually work on. And so they figured, why not start putting some like our own brand behind this consulting side, these consulting side of things. So that's how Fisherman started, honestly. And since then, it's just, we've just been going for it, growing a lot. They originally started a lot, mostly mobile apps. You know, 4 years ago, that's like what everyone was trying to do. Definitely a lot more mobile app work back then. But yeah, so they just started going for it and building a team, and just really rallying a vision behind just creating excellent products. I think in LA in particular, a lot of the agencies, a lot of the creative agencies are more marketing based. They're definitely more marketing advertising based.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to look at the major industry that's there. So that makes sense.
So they're meeting that industry. But as we saw a lot of these opportunities in tech come up in LA, they kind of filled that gap a little bit and really, really focused on experience and product strategy and less about what's a compelling marketing strategy or campaign.
Sure.
You know, we still are involved and care about those elements, but definitely the kind of the core foundation of Fisherman was just building incredible experiences. And so, yeah, again, started a lot of time with mobile apps and websites. And now at this point, Fisherman has kind of, you know, it definitely was a gradual. We're full service. We have design in-house. They didn't have design in-house until about a year ago.
Till they brought you in.
Yeah. So that's crazy. Design's new. Development, we kind of cover the gamut there. And then recently for us, we've been spending a lot of time in augmented reality and virtual reality. So pretty much like,
we're definitely gonna have to talk about that because I know nothing about that.
Yeah, and honestly, hopefully I can speak into it. I'm still just like eyes wide open.
Well, it's
like,
so new. I think everybody's like that though.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, it's been fun, and we cover a lot of different types of you know, services and across a lot of different industries. And I think more recently too as well, we've just been spending a lot of time. We love, our team is really made up of a lot of people that care about product and care about strategy and the big picture. They're not just going to execute something you hand them. They really care about the end deliverable. And so for us, it's, you know, we really enjoy startups. Mm-hmm. That's always been kind of one of our things, at Fisherman, just helping startups, kind of build their product but we also have been fortunate to work with a lot of cool, bigger companies, some Fortune 500 companies. Mm-hmm. And so something that we care a lot about is kind of taking those, you know, learnings from one and applying it to the other and vice versa. Sure. And I think that kind of creates just a really cool, unique approach in a lot of our work.
Sure. How would you approach a Fortune 500 company differently than you would approach a startup?
Well, the one thing
and I know that's a very general statement when you're talking things.
But. No, that's hard. I'd say like the first thing that came to my mind would be like, honestly, like speed and iteration.
Sure.
Like startups love just like, let's just go for it and like learn and then like try to like change and adjust and, you know, tweak as we need to.
What's the expression? Fail fast, fail often.
Yep. Exactly. So, startups are more inclined to do that, obviously, because they need to get moving or else they're, you know, out of cash.
Sure.
A lot of the bigger companies are kind of stuck more in kind of the waterfall mentality. We're an agile agency. So, you know, a lot of times we'll run into these companies that want a fixed budget and want it done by this time. And it's kind of just like, there you go. Mm-hmm. we end up working with those bigger companies and explain to them and really detail out the benefits of not having that mentality.
Sure.
And really focusing, you know, on our 2-week sprints. This is what we're getting done. This is what we got done. This is what's next. Just kind of really getting them on board with that structure. And I think for startups that, or for larger companies, that allows them to kind of innovate and iterate and try things and not be so closed-minded.
Sure.
But
so as someone who works in a big company that, you know, that's hard to convince people of, what would your approach be to, you know, explaining the benefits of working in that agile, you know, situation?
Yeah. I mean, I think from like the, on the ideation side, I think mm-hmm. there's just so much more freedom. You know, you're not confined to time frame as much. Obviously you want to get things done quickly and on time and
sure.
within the desired budget and everything. But, I, from a design perspective, I love having that freedom to kind of hash out different ideas, try different ideas, do exercises to kind of, work through, you know, a design sprint and not feel like, we're going into it and just like, this is exactly what we're doing. And mm-hmm. it's not a lot of choice or options there.
Sure. Well, I mean, yeah, with big companies, there is that they tend to be very risk adverse.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of rigidity that comes with that. So, you know, how do you break down those walls?
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. Yeah. You're working against a lot there for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Just what people are used to and kind of that structure.
Yeah. So I lost my train of thought. you know, getting back into it, you're working in those different situations between, you know, startups and established companies. When you're going in, you know, are you approaching it as a consultancy role at first and then diving into the design phase? Because, I mean, you mentioned you do go over a lot of strategy and build those things out as well. How does that work? And I guess this is a question, you know, not just as a company, but specifically for you, since, you know, you've got that background in the business administration side of things, as well as a background in design. How are you balancing that?
Yeah. So, I mean, just to provide a little bit more insight, too, on the differences between, you know, what we might do with, like, a Walmart or a Sony versus startup A, startup B. For the bigger companies, we're kind of seen more as like their innovation arm.
Sure.
So if they're trying something that's a little more leading edge technology, they don't have the resources or the experience in that. So especially right now, AR, VR, that's like our bread and butter with these bigger companies. Everyone's really interested and can spend a little bit of money. And
sure.
so,
just to clarify, I don't think I ever want an AR VR experience with Walmart. It's already terrifying enough.
Oh God. Oh man. Oh, that's so funny. But yeah, so for them, they what's cool is they'll come to us and they are a little bit more excited about, you know, innovating and trying different things, and kind of breaking the mold a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's still a lot of things that we, you know, like I said earlier, have to kind of process with them. But yeah, so I think like from that sense, there's a little bit more structure kind of going into it. With startups, however, we really pride ourselves and really care about that startup. So we work with them from kind of our initial touch point with them is really like, what are your objectives? Where do you guys see this going? You know, we typically do like a pre-meeting, which is, you know, a few hour meeting a couple of weeks before we kick off the project.
Sure.
And that's just like getting the team acquainted, getting, you know, generally, you know, what we're planning on doing together. And then that, when we kick off with our discovery meeting, that's where we dive deep and really talk. It's not just, hey, here's a user story. Like we need this person to be able to do this. It's really setting up those clear goals and metrics so that like every design decision is informed by that business's objective or strategy. And we speak into those things. We help them kind of form that. But, you know, obviously we work with a lot of incredible startups that have some of the, those things set. So we just need to make sure everyone's on the same page so that when I'm designing or any of our other designers are working through some problems, they're processing it through, hey, this is where we're trying to go. This is the objective. I'm not just like trying to make this screen do this, this one thing.
Sure.
It's part of the larger ecosystem. So, yeah, we really care a lot about that. And luckily too, like, I mean, I have my background with like a business degree, but luckily Charles and Eden as well too, just have so much experience in seeing, you know, different companies and different industries. Eden and Charles are involved in quite a few different businesses. So they're able to really speak into that and help, you know, potentially craft something around not just a product, but craft something around that product that really hopefully helps that product thrive.
Sure. So let's talk about VR and AR. Cause I know what like Oculus Rift is. I know what the different platforms are. I know the difference between virtual reality and augmented reality. That's where it ends. Like I know that Pokemon Go is augmented reality versus an Oculus Rift, which is virtual reality.
Right. You got it down. That's all you need. I think
okay.
We're good.
Oh, good. Okay. Great. That was easy.
Yeah, man, it's been crazy. We've seen just so much interest and excitement around it. And, for us, you know, with Charles and his gaming background, he's been heading up the VR AR side of things. We've been fortunate to work with some pretty big companies. We started working, on a while back, we did some AR stuff, with like kids education. So we had our foot in the door, quite a few years ago. Basically it's like an AR application where a kid can point at like different maps that they might have, and it's interactive and they can kind of walk through that and learn different stories. And, so that was really kind of getting our foot in the door. And then honestly, especially for us being in LA, you have a lot of companies, a lot of entertainment companies interested in, you know, pairing what they're doing in the film industry with VR experiences. I think VR, is such a, you know, easy, clear branch off of like film entertainment. Like,
sure,
there's so many cool opportunities for, you know, fan A to be thrown into the immersive world that they love in this particular movie. So we built some stuff with Ghostbusters, which was super fun. did a Android VR, experience with Ghostbusters. But yeah, man, we're excited. We've just seen, it's like, there's just so much interest behind it. There's so much momentum behind it at this point. People just interested, in just kind of exploring some of their options there. A lot of it is innovation, more like what I'd categorize as more innovation. Just, will this work? Like, we have an idea, like, and some money, like, we're not sure though if it's the future, but we want to try to invest in it now, maybe be ahead of the game a little bit. But just in some of the just numbers and kind of research that we always talk about as we talk with these people is just how much those markets are growing.
Sure.
And just especially like, you know, VR, I always am not concerned about, because I think it's going to have a pretty successful future. But
it's not just a fad.
Right. But there are some challenges with VR because of the hardware required. It's like you got to drop some serious cash if you want to get in the game right now. Like,
sure.
There is like PlayStation VR, but that experience isn't that incredible yet. So hardware is going to get there. But in the meantime, AR has been really exciting for us too, especially since pretty much everyone has an AR device in their phone at this point. Mm-hmm. A lot of exciting stuff coming out with ARKit. We're working with some companies that have some really cool technology that we can utilize for some of those entertainment marketing campaigns or experiences or games that some of these companies are interested in doing. So,
Every sci-fi movie out there has some sort, especially the dystopian ones, have some sort of AR component to them.
Oh, absolutely.
You
know, just
that's what the future is going to be. And I mean, you see, early on, I don't think people were even thinking of it as augmented reality, but you've got Google Glass.
Yeah.
You remember, I mean, that's totally an AR experience because you're wearing something, you're still seeing the natural world in front of you.
Totally.
And then, you know, you're also having this on-screen experience right in front of you at the same time.
Yeah. And actually Google Glass was on Product Hunt this week, just talking through their, like, how they're being utilized in like manufacturing jobs and education and healthcare and stuff like that. And I think, you know, gaming is going to be huge for VR, AR, but I think there's so much potential in those other industries of training and medicine. And
I was about to specifically bring medicine up. I can see AR really making a leap forward in medicine of
totally
stuff like that.
Yeah. So, it's exciting. And honestly, like I love it because, you know, I'm still learning a ton about AR, VR and how to design for AR and VR. I have a long way to go in that front, but
sure.
It's nice. It's fun hopping into VR at the office. Just when you need a break, you can kind of get lost in your own little world for a bit. And
sure.
There's some pretty crazy games out there right now. So
sure.
It's a fun time.
So, you know, with AR and VR, how, since it's such an experiential thing for both of them, how does that change design from a typical product or website or things like that, of how you would formulate and craft that strategy to make things work?
Yeah, man, it's a challenge. We have an incredible team working on our VR stuff, but I think, you know, from kind of the concepting phase and ideation phase, you do have to like try to get yourself out of the mentality of like, we're building something for a screen.
Sure.
And which is for me very challenging. But I think there's certainly things that, given most people's experience with digital products is through their phone or through their computer. So there's certain things that you can borrow from that, but, really being able to step out of that. And I think that's why I like, you know, having a really strong understanding of design beyond those elements is super important because, you know, you gotta think about how with VR, you gotta think about how someone's actually going to be interacting with that in the real world. It's not an interface as much. Obviously interface has to be tied into it to a certain extent, but, in terms of like crafting concepts and flows and stuff, being able to remove yourself from those confines a little bit and just really process, okay, this is supposed to mirror reality. Mm-hmm. You know, this person's standing in this scenario, what are they actually going to do? And so the challenges there are like, I think right now the biggest challenges are educating the user on how to actually interact in VR, different with the different platforms or different ways that the controllers are different, things like that. And how do you visually indicate, hey, you can go open that door as opposed to that door is just not able to be open.
Not openable. Yeah.
So things like that where, you know, it's been fun and a challenge to work through, indicators, you know, how can you utilize voice? Cause voice is way more of an outlet in virtual reality. Obviously mobile products, there's a lot of, buzz around that right now with mobile, but I think with VR, like you're in the real world, like you don't have to use text. Like you can really enhance the experience through voice acting and a narrator or prompting voice. So, just being open and willing to kind of explore those different things that it's not that like, there's just so much more that you can take advantage of. So you got to kind of get your mind there. Like, okay, what can we like, let's get crazy with some ideas, you know?
Sure.
So, yeah.
So I want to switch back to you for a minute, since you've been there about 2 years now, you know, how, and with, you know, things growing from a normal UI process to into AR and VR and all that, you know, new innovation stuff that keeps coming out. How have you seen yourself grow? And I don't mean just like your workflow and, you know, that.
Yeah, man, it's been, I feel like I'm learning stuff every day. I would say that I've just learned a lot about, product in general. I think because we focus so much on trying to create good products, not just things that look beautiful or, are appealing to the eye. I'm always learning through mishaps and missteps, but also successes and conversations and collaboration, just a ton about product strategy and what makes a good product. And the beautiful part about agency work is that you get to experience like tons of different industries and people with different concepts and, probably more so than if you were in-house somewhere and working maybe on one product.
Sure.
So I've been really just taking it all in and just learning about how different things, how different industries can use technology and create good experiences, from just like, kind of a personal standpoint. I've realized in light of that, just, so many areas of just having to kind of go for it again and just feel it out and mm-hmm. learn by doing especially now, like, you know, I'm nowhere near being like what I'd say is an incredible designer. There's so many talented people out there that honestly, like scrubbing through Dribbble, you're just like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? These people are incredible. I love design and I just truly enjoy doing it, but I'd say I've learned more how to, utilize the people around me and people and our team. I'm leading the design team now, and that's more just, speaking into and informing our processes as a design team and, some creative direction as well. But just really trusting and honestly, I'm learning just a ton about how to manage people and how to encourage people and inspire people and keep people engaged.
Sure.
One of our big things is we just want people to love the project they're actually working on and not hoping for that next project that might be fun. So things like that, honestly are just so hard. It's like, it's a challenge. It's a fun challenge. And luckily our team's awesome. And, like I said, composed of a lot of people who are go-getters and really just enjoy learning too. And, I think personally for me, just learning a lot about that, I think, I've been helping as well on the business development side of things, which, that's fascinating, learning how to sell your company and sell your services and tell that story that gets people excited about what you're doing and wanting to partner with you.
Sure. Any tips for that? Cause I suck at it.
I don't know. I'm sure there's been some people on that show that got some good insight that we could all learn from, but I don't know if I'm quite there yet. So just learning a lot. I think the biggest thing about the agency is, you're working with different industries, you're working with different products, but you're also, you know, I'm luckily get to be very, very involved with the strategy and vision mm-hmm. for Fisherman. Charles and Eden have brought me into that. And so, just get to learn, kind of take some of those learnings and
put that degree to use.
Yeah, exactly. And hopefully it works because it needs to, because it's our company. Yeah. So
cool. Sure. So, you know, moving forward, what are some exciting things you're looking forward to that you're allowed to talk about?
Yeah, let's see. What I'm really excited about in the next few projects we have coming down the pipeline are our mobile apps, which, like I said, we've kind of been short on a little bit recently. So there's a few, mm-hmm. there's two projects that's one's in healthcare. I can't say too much, which I'm sure you hear all the time. But that one will be involved it's a mobile product for cancer patients, which oh, cool. I'm really excited about the opportunity to build something that's not just like another social network or something, you know, it's really impactful.
Sure.
So That one I'm really excited about. And we got some other mobile products coming in that, again, I just personally, I love mobile apps. That's probably my favorite place mm-hmm. to design. So our team's gearing up for that. Something that actually the meeting I stepped out of earlier was something that we do at Fisherman is we do a big company trip every year. So we're sure. planning and prepping for that, sure. and that's coming up pretty soon here. And so this year we're going to Tokyo.
Nice.
Which will be interesting, balancing that. We're working out there. It's not just a vacation.
But, sure.
Yeah, that's something that I'm really stoked on. We're gearing up for that. That's coming up pretty soon. So some fun stuff going on over here.
From my understanding, I've never been, but from my understanding, Tokyo is completely different from everything else in Japan.
Yeah, I've been once, and yeah, it's pretty intense, man. It is like overstimulating. There's just so much going on. But yeah, once you get out of that city, it's pretty quiet, pretty mellow.
Cool. So wrapping up real quick, where can people find you online?
Yeah. I think, okay. So my handle on Twitter, you can follow me at B Komae, which you probably don't know how to spell that. It's B K O M A E. That's the same as Instagram. Dribble, I think I'm Bryce_K. I should know my handles, huh?
It's okay. I'm going to link to
Yeah, Bryce_K. And yeah, you can check out. What's that?
Oh, I said I'm going to link to them in the show notes anyways.
Oh, perfect. But yeah, and then, yeah, you can check us out at fishermanlabs.com. Just kind of peruse around the site, see the different things we've been up to and been working on. We got some case studies on there. So yeah, that's where you can find us.
Cool. Well, Bryce, thank you so much for taking the time out to chat with me. I'm glad I could rescue you from that meeting.
Yes, thank you, man. I appreciate it. This has been a blast.
Not a problem. Go ahead and hug some necks.
There we go. All right, man. Take it easy.
You can find out more about Bryce on Twitter at BKomae, and be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at CreativeSOPod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CreativeSouthGA over at CreativeSouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribble, Twitter, and Instagram. Visit jackprince.com and get 20% off orders over $25 when you use promo code CreateSouth17 at checkout. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at Patreon.com/CreativeSouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.